WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. Time for the latest from our collaboration with WBEZ's Prison Cast. We put together a special election-themed show for people in prisons and jails and the public at large. This episode brings you the conversation I had with Nicole Lewis, an engagement editor for the Marshall Project. That's a nonprofit news organization focused on inequities within the criminal justice system. We dig into the Marshall Project's recent survey of incarcerated people across the country about the November election. More than 54,000 people responded, including more than 1,000 in Illinois. And what they said might surprise you. I began by asking Nicole what kinds of questions she sent to people inside.
We wanted to know, you know, who they would pick if they could vote for president. We wanted to know if they thought Kamala Harris was qualified for the job. We asked them questions about what political party do they identify with, whether or not they see themselves as Democrats, Republicans, or independents. We asked questions that allowed us to compare their responses with the responses of people on the outside.
And just so we're clear, Nicole, in Illinois, people in jail awaiting trial, they maintain their right to vote. People who are in prison are the ones who can't vote, at least until they serve their sentence and they're released. But the rules vary by state. Now, if incarcerated people could vote, who have they said that they'd support in the presidential election?
Yeah, if everyone behind bars could vote, right? If the sort of franchise was open to them, overwhelmingly, our respondents said that they would vote for Trump. And we see some really important demographic trends there. So white men really prefer Trump as their candidate. But a large share of black men said that they would vote for Trump, too, if they had the chance.
Now, in a few moments, we're going to bring in one of your colleagues to hear more about where Donald Trump and Kamala Harris stand on issues affecting people inside. But first, I want to play some tape here of incarcerated men who registered to vote inside Cook County Jail. Here they are explaining who they support and why.
I'm voting for Trump, even though he's an asshole, he keeps it 100. He let everybody know what's going on with the world.
Harris, she a Democrat, and I feel like she better off than Trump.
Donald Trump, because he kick ass. I mean, I just feel like, you know, he more for the people than the rest of the presidential who trying to step up and want us to elect on them.
It's time for a change. Just like Harris said, she's a good candidate, you know. Donald Trump, he let me down last time.
So, Nicole, what are some other things that you heard from people in Illinois about why they support one candidate over the other? I mean, that tape just kind of made pretty plain what you said a moment ago. A lot of people are supporting Trump.
Yeah, I mean, I think in some ways people told us that they identify with the president. He is now has 34 felony convictions, and so people are, you know, they see more of themselves in him than they can see in some of the other candidates. The perception is that he's really been influential on criminal justice reform, where the Democrats have fallen short.
Something WBEZ has been hearing during our regular visits to Cook County Jail is that jail is kind of an information desert, right? And this is, of course, part of the reason why we're doing this program. People say they can't get enough background on the races, and they feel like they can't cast an informed vote. I want to play a little sound from Isaiah Hudson, who we met at Cook County.
Everything's pretty much word of mouth, you know, what we hear from our families, what we hear from staff. That's pretty much it. I mean, we see a little bit on TV, but we don't always have the opportunity to watch TV, of course.
So what are you hearing about, you know, what information access is like in prisons and jails?
Yeah, in many ways, access to information is actually the key issue here. So many folks have told us in prison as well as in jail that the news is censored. They don't have enough access to create opinions of their own, right? And you heard that in this clip, that word of mouth and what people are talking about influences so much of people's ideas and their thinking. Mm-hmm. And some people expressed a sense of isolation, right? That they want to be able to drill down and develop their own thoughts, but they just really don't have that access.
Another topic that you asked about in your survey is what kind of punishment do people think Donald Trump should face for his own conviction on 34 felony counts? So what did you hear on that?
Yeah, we found a number of things. I'd say, by and large, our respondents were much more willing to be lenient towards the president than folks on the outside, right? And so we can see that in comparison polls. But then there was this huge division based on how you identified. So Republicans who responded to our survey mostly said, we think Donald Trump should be fined. That's plenty enough punishment for what he's done. Democrats, on the other hand, were much more likely to say, we actually think Donald Trump should be incarcerated. He has 34 felony convictions. Mm-hmm. You know, we would be incarcerated. And so there was a certain kind of pragmatism that emerged in a lot of their responses about what they choose. Many folks said, you know, prison and jail actually hasn't done anything for me, and it wouldn't do anything for the president. Or prison and jail is so harmful that we actually wouldn't want to see another person sent here, even if it is Donald Trump. And then other folks said, you know, folks who are more inclined to incarcerate the president said, well, actually, if it were me with 34 felonies, I'd be in prison forever. So why should he get special treatment, or why should we go easier on him? You know, status, money, wealth, fame actually shouldn't get you special treatment in this mm-hmm. system.
And Nicole, for people listening who might still be unsure, why is it important to have this kind of snapshot of how incarcerated people are thinking about politics?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great question. The majority of people behind bars will return home one day. So it really matters what they think, right? Because we don't have an understanding of when all these folks come back, like, what does that mean for them? I'd say the other big thing, you know, I've reported on felony disenfranchisement for the Marshall Project for years, mm-hmm. and I always heard, you know, presidential candidates, other candidates simply do not campaign in communities with high rates of incarceration. They say these are communities where people don't vote, they don't show up, we're not going to prioritize any time. And I think our survey makes really, really clear a couple of things. Number one, that there is a broad political spectrum behind bars. So that means that conservative candidates, right, have mm-hmm. constituents who are incarcerated. I think that's really important to know. But it also means that any candidate, right, who can think about policies that would actually move the needle, that would actually touch folks who are in this position, have a potential base of support, right? So just spending the time really thinking about the issues that matter here, right, is an opportunity for more voters.
And thinking and then, differently about your outreach.
That's exactly right. And maybe just one last thing, right? So I think it's obviously tremendously important. The criminal justice system affects so many people. It affects many more people than who are incarcerated, right? So we can see that about half of all Americans have a loved one who's been in lockup of some kind. And about 79 million people have a criminal record of some kind. So when we talk about incarcerated voters, who they're connected to, right, that's a huge share of people who actually do still have access to voting.
Right.
So it, just to take it back, that like prisons and jails are much more porous than we give them credit for being. So this is not just an issue that affects people behind bars. It really affects all of us.
We've been speaking with Nicole Lewis, an engagement editor for the Marshall Project, about their political survey of people in prisons and jails. Thank you, Nicole.
Thank you.
Now let's bring in one of her colleagues. Jamiles Larte is a staff writer at the Marshall Project. He's here to provide an inside look into the presidential candidate's own relationships with the criminal justice system and where they stand on issues that directly impact people who are in prisons. Welcome to the show, Jamiles.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So have either Kamala Harris or Donald Trump weighed in on issues around prisons specifically, like sentencing reform or prison conditions?
Frankly, no. And it's a dramatic shift in some ways from you know, certainly the Democratic primary of 2019 into 2020, when criminal justice reform was really kind of hot, almost you could say, and it was a way for candidates to distinguish themselves. So I think in 2024, there are a lot of topics that kind of touch on criminal justice issues, whether it's debates over immigration or the general framing of the election as one between a prosecutor and a convicted felon. Mm-hmm. You know, so I don't want to suggest that criminal justice is absent from this campaign, but in terms of policy questions about, you know, how should we do sentencing, or what should the rules be about solitary confinement, or how should police be trained, that just hasn't been part of the 2024 campaign to this point.
Mm-hmm. I want to back up a little bit then and talk about each candidate's personal experiences with the criminal justice system and what we know about how that's shaped their views. Kamala Harris worked as prosecutor and was San Francisco's district attorney and California's attorney general. Can you remind us, Jamiles, what was her record like?
Yeah, I mean, Kamala Harris, you know, her experience with the criminal justice system comes primarily as an elected prosecutor in San Francisco and as the state attorney general of California. And both roles she's tasked with enforcing criminal law. And she's often described her time in those roles as working on behalf of the victims of crime, especially violent crimes and crimes against women. She was involved in efforts over that time that put her in the company of criminal justice reformers, like the Back on Track Diversion Program that she spearheaded. And that was on the earlier side of the emergence of programs like that. She was also involved in programs that I think would be seen today as embodying a quote-unquote tough-on-crime mindset, like efforts to reduce school truancy that put the prospect of arresting parents for children's school absences on the table. Although the cases where that actually happened were extremely few, and there were other officials and policies in play.
Donald Trump's been convicted of multiple felonies. Do we have a sense of whether that shapes his views on the criminal justice system?
You know, he's frequently spoken about the system as being rigged or unfair, or these cases as a politicized effect to target him. And in that, I would say he's occupying a space that's fairly unique in American politics to date. On the one hand, he's been aggressively, quote unquote, tough on crime. He's embraced a law and order persona, speaking derisively about criminal defendants and often bombastically about the problem of crime, sometimes in misleading and incorrect ways. But he's also expressed quite a bit of skepticism about the criminal justice system, going after the judges and prosecutors who've been involved in the cases where he's been on trial.
How much of an impact can the president have on the criminal justice system?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think it's important, you know, anytime we're having this conversation, to understand that most of our criminal justice system does not happen at the federal level, and the president doesn't have a ton of control over how most laws get enforced.
Right.
They're mostly state laws that are enforced by county level or city level officials.
So taking into account that limited power that you just described, I mean, what kinds of policies did we see Trump enact when he was president?
Right. So that being said, Trump's criminal justice background during the 4 years he was president are kind of mixed. I mean, on the one hand, he did sign an executive order after the killing of George Floyd that at least proposed to make some minor changes to policing. He also quite infamously signed the First Step Act, which was the first major piece of bipartisan criminal justice reform legislation that we'd seen in decades in this country, and has since led to the release of over 40,000 federal prisoners since its implementation. You know, on the other side of that coin, Trump fueled a national execution binge towards the end of his term. He made our nation's immigration system far more punitive. He deployed federal law enforcement in some fairly novel ways during the summer of 2020. And I also think it's just worth, I mean, we're talking about the past, but it's probably just worth pausing here to mention that he's also promised in a second term to mobilize the military in cities to fight crime, mm-hmm. And a number of other really unprecedented proposals around criminal justice.
Right. Harris currently serves as vice president, and her power is even more limited. So talk to us about what the Biden administration has done on criminal justice issues.
Yeah. So, I mean, earlier I just mentioned that the president doesn't have much power over the criminal justice system. One caveat there, like one thing that the president definitely can do, is directly set the policies and procedures for federal law enforcement, like the FBI, the DEA, the U.S. Marshals, organizations like that. So that's something that the Biden administration has used its power to do. It put in restrictions around the use of no-knock warrants by federal officials. They changed rules around federal officials wearing body cameras. They changed the use of force standards to get rid of what people will colloquially probably know as chokeholds. Biden also signed a bipartisan bill to increase oversight of federal prisons just earlier this summer. Like Trump, Biden also has been fairly limited in his use of clemency to pardon or shorten the sentences of federal prisoners. And yeah, I mean, to the kind of thrust of the question, it's really not terribly clear where a theoretical President Harris would pick up on these efforts in her first term.
That's Jamiles Larte, who's a staff writer at the Marshall Project. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it was great to be with you.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Meha Ahmed, Alex Keefe, and Lauren Frost. It was mixed by Ari Mejia. Reset brings context to breaking news. If you're interested in hearing more, you can check out our entire catalog of interviews at wbez.org/reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. I'll talk to you this afternoon.
My name is Liz, and as a teacher, I think that WBEZ provides endless sources that I can bring back to my students where they can also engage in a deeper understanding. I teach government, I teach U.S. history, and I have used sources from WBEZ in order to help enrich the understanding of my students.